And welcome back to Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies with me, your host, Philip Michaels, and my charming, lovely co-host, Lisa Schmeiser.
Is this a Freaky Friday set up here?
It is membership month.
Oh.
And what that means,
Phil. Does it mean that, like, it's gender reversal? It's everything is fluid?
Anything is possible, Phil, if you become a member of The Incomparable.
I see.
By paying to become a fully supporting member of The Incomparable, you get access to such membership exclusives, like listening to podcast rough tracks as we record, members-only podcasts, like the two that we owe, or the one we did last year, we watch Suicide Squad and then unpack that for everybody.
Yeah.
Or other goodies, including, but not limited to, and not promising, things like t-shirts, badges, patches, stickers, stuff like that.
Ah.
If you go to The Incomparable's website, there will be a membership page. We urge you to click on the link and join. You can specify which shows you're supporting. Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies is one of the shows you can pick, and we want to thank everybody who sponsored us last year.
Sure.
And we want to thank you for your continued support, and we also want to thank you for your continued patience as we get back on the road after, what month is this now?
It is March.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Barely. But here we are.
March weather.
Yes.
Anyway. Yeah, no. I mean, you know, you can support your favorite podcasters, your favorite people on the network. You can have that warm glow inside of you that comes from kicking a couple of bucks to some people who bring you hours and, in some cases, minutes of entertainment.
Actual minutes of entertainment from us.
Yes, and you can look at it from the what's in it for me? Why shouldn't I wet my beak? And yeah, you get stuff.
I tell you what, Phil. If people support us, will you wish them happy birthday in Progressive Red Skull's voice?
Yes.
Well, there you go. This is another good reason to support The Incomparable is if you mark us down as one of the shows you want to sponsor, Progressive Red Skull will personally wish you a happy birthday.
Perhaps a happy Earth Day, too. We really should think more of the Earth.
See? There you go.
Less of ourselves.
Aren't we all part of Mother Gaia?
Yes.
So, really, what do you have to...
Red Skull's up me reader hasn't come this month. He doesn't know what you're talking about.
So, really, the point is go to The Incomparable's website, and you are welcome to...
You're welcome to pay do that. You're welcome to have a stroke.
Pay for quality content
then
like
quickly
that.
Quickly recover and keep going as if nothing has happened.
But you know what? We've spent like a minute asking people to support the website and the podcast, and I think that's long enough. Philip, why have we had such a lag between podcasts?
Oh, you know, life gets in the way, but we've actually been going to see movies in theaters.
Yeah, that's weird.
As Hollywood intended.
Yes. Yes, I dragged Phil to see Black Panther.
Which I liked.
And I was on a podcast about that one briefly.
Yeah, that has been done and dusted and discussed on other podcasts. My little thoughts on it don't matter. I will say that I enjoyed how deftly that movie handled backstory.
Yeah.
In which it was basically, they got all this crazy technology in this country, and
it's pretty
the king
awesome,
has
right?
superpowers, and it's cool.
Yeah.
Anyhow, here's our story.
Yes,
I like that. They did in about 5 minutes what it takes Ben Affleck 3 movies to get to.
Well, the tattoo, it slows down. It's like drag, narratively speaking.
Yes, exactly.
So the thing is, there were no decent trailers in that movie.
No, it was all come, hey, you are...
You suckers see Marvel movies, don't you?
Here. You look like the kind of person who pays full price to see a Marvel movie.
Yeah.
Well, there are 82 of them coming.
Yeah, we saw trailers for 2 of them. One was for the Ant-Man and the Wasp, which Paul Rudd does the Paul Rudd thing, and Michael Douglas is the
cranky old man.
The gilf. Grandfather. Anyway, not me personally. I'm just saying that's how he's being positioned these days. And we did see one trailer that you wanted to discuss, which was the Lara Croft trailer.
Yes. Yes, and that is out in theaters now, and I understand it's not a great movie. It's probably better than the Angelina Jolie ones, which were not very good at all.
I think there's just the one.
No, there were two.
She did a sequel?
There were literally two.
I only remember seeing the first one, and I remember being angry that I paid money to sit in a theater and see the first one.
I think a lot of people had that, but they did. Enough of you sat there and got angry.
And seethed silently.
And Hollywood does not go well.
I don't
well.
Care if you have a good experience. No. I just care that you have
exactly.
the experience. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I'm going to steal the line from Mark Kermode, but uh-huh. it's basically, if you really want to make box office receipts matter, have people pay as they're leaving the theater.
Yeah.
And that. But I think Hollywood saw the big pile of money and didn't care if it was angry
yeah.
money.
Well,
and there was a sequel.
So the preview for mm-hmm. the rebooted Tomb Raider,
yeah.
she's now younger and less problematic than Angelina Jolie.
Yes. She wears sensible clothing in the jungle instead of, like, short shorts.
It just looked like such a joyless CGI slog. Mm-hmm. The thing that I find difficult about video game movies in general mm-hmm. is... So the big attraction to video games is that, of course, you are self-insert into the narrative. Granted, somebody else has made up the structure, but it's a self-insert, and you get to do crazy physics-defying things, and there's monsters, or soldiers, or Nazis, or you know, whatever mm-hmm. it was that...
Or monster soldier Nazis,
or
yes,
whatever
yes.
it was that Michael Fassbender was fighting when he
Assassin's
did his,
Creed, yeah. Lisa. Keep
so,
up with the assigned
So he fought
reading.
Assassins, I'm guessing.
He fought Apollo Creed, who has become an assassin since losing to Rocky, yes.
The market... Employment market for Xboxers is tough.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, video games work because they're an immersive experience for the player, and the problem with movies is, by definition, it's not an interactive experience.
No, it's like you're sitting back watching someone else play the video game.
Apparently people do that, and I just don't get that.
No, it is...
Yeah, this is how you can tell I'm middle-aged. Anyway, the point is, when I saw the preview and just all this stupid jumping around and my father this, and no, you can't do it that, it just looked boring and hectic and loud.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that's what the review said, but... I watched and I thought, this is even, again, bigger and louder and dumber than stuff I have, like, watched on purpose. And we're talking about, I spent a cross-country flight recently watching the TV adaptation of a Guy Ritchie movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So,
okay.
So, you know, obviously my threshold for loud and incoherent is really high.
Yeah,
and even this is just not...
It's odd that as video games themselves have gotten more cinematic,
mm-hmm.
that cinematic adaptations of video games are still as bad as...
Inert.
As
yeah.
when Raul Julia was in, was it Mortal Kombat or Street... No, Street Fighter.
He was in Street Fighter.
That was his last movie. What a way to go.
I believe wasn't one of Peter O'Toole's last movies Troy?
Yes.
So there you go.
Yeah.
Everybody...
So you pick your scripts wisely.
The end of life is not dignified for anybody is the lesson I'm getting here. But.
No. It's a sad... little fact that the best video game movie is of a video game that actually didn't exist, Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
That was one of the few...
Because it's a movie written to be a movie where you take the conventions and you transpose them into a movie.
Right.
I think one of the big problems of video game movies, and I say this having watched Mortal Kombat,
mm-hmm.
and I think there have been a few others. Like, I watched Silent Hill.
I think you watched Doom, too, because...
Oh, yeah, I did.
The Rock was in it.
Oh, he was.
And he's going to be in another one.
Yeah, well...
For a trailer that...
Because The Rock is basically a walking special effect.
Yes. He is a walking video game character, as he literally played in Jumanji.
Yes.
But,
What I was going to say is, Wreck-It Ralph worked because it was a movie about video game characters, and we haven't had a movie that really gets the joy or the point of video games at all.
Mm-hmm.
And extrapolates it from there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you may not be able to. It might be a fundamental limitation of the medium. The same way that it was really tough to adapt books to movies for a long time, because you have to cut out a lot of the interiority and the conspiracy between reader and author, and you have to focus more on how to transpose elements like, oh, I'm here to eliminate the human condition, mm-hmm. into a visual vocabulary instead of a prose vocabulary. Or think about, you know, you and I were talking about movies in the 1920s and 30s. One of the big challenges is they're often filmed like plays.
Yes.
But
the original Dracula is basically they're doing the stage play and someone set up some cameras and is going, go!
Or that ridiculous ridiculous movie about Henry VIII that we watched.
Yes, with Charles Laughton and Elsa Lancaster.
As Anne of Cleves. And she's hilarious in that. And it's like her talent pops off the screen. But they played that like a play, too. And again, the problem is what makes a play special is the live energy and the interaction and the fact that the audience is dragged into complicity with the performance. Mm-hmm. And what's completely different in a movie is you have none of that. You are not interactive. You're passive. I mean, you can be a critical consumer of a movie, but the fact of the matter is that your role is to consent to the narrative and just watch it.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think the Rock's upcoming video game movie project.
Is that the one with his best friend, the bear?
Yeah, it's an ape.
Ape, yes, that's right. Sorry. I knew it was a charismatic megafauna.
The movie is Rampage, which is a game I actually played in the arcades back in the day.
Oh, wow.
And the fun thing about Rampage is it was basically as if Guillermo del Toro designed a video game. No, you don't sleep with fishmen.
Yeah.
But what happens is you control a giant oversized gorilla or a giant Godzilla creature or a giant werewolf type creature. Uh-huh. And they climb the buildings, and the object is that you are punching the buildings and reaching inside the buildings and eating people. And there are tanks and planes, and it's just kind of, it's a fun punching kind of thing. And
quick puncher, huh?
Yeah, and I think the movie, they're clearly adding some sort of environmental message because the Earth is our friend, and there's
we're not treating our mother very respectfully.
No, and there is it was the entire point of Darren Aronofsky's latest movie. It was a little bit unsubtle for my tastes.
A tad too literal at the end when the baby is killed and eaten.
Yes. Mind you, I enjoyed it.
Well, you are Red Skull, after all. So what I really want to see, actually, is the reality TV series based on The Sims.
No, that would actually make a good movie. Well, I mean, in essence, it's The Truman Show.
You know what how The Sims work? This ties into another preview that you and I saw when we went to go see Death of Stalin.
Yeah.
It ties into the preview we saw for the latest Steven Soderbergh movie, Unsane,
yes.
Where the whole thing is, it's very claustrophobic, and she's being manipulated by her stalker, blah, blah, blah. I feel like if you make The Sims, you make it as a horror movie, where it's a group of people who are stuck in a weird, soulless suburb, and food appears at mysterious times, and they can't speak anything to each other. They can just communicate in like pictographs, and random strangers appear in their house, and they're expected to raise them as their own children. Mm-hmm. And like, it could be an amazing horror film.
And every so often, a 13-year-old their 13-year-old god is making them have sex with each other,
or a horse.
Yes.
Yeah, and then they're busy sobbing, Tadalu, Fla Blue,
no,
Tadalu, Tadalu.
Wow, I would watch that. The movie.
I would not, because Darren Aronofsky gives me nightmares. I want to know that the movie's out there in the world giving other people nightmares.
I want to see Cubert, the movie, where.
That was the one where it was the thing with like a horn nose.
It's
that
the thing with
on.
The horn nose, and it jumps around. And
I think
games Charlie
movies.
Day would be a great Cubert. Charlie Day is Cubert.
He does have the frenetic energy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Frogger is your environmental video game movie.
Yeah, sure.
Because actually, roadkill and human beings mangling animals that have the nerve to want to have a habitat, that's like actually a growing concern in ecological circles. So Frogger could amplify that.
Yeah, you said
that.
It in Florida.
Yeah. Well, the problem in Florida is they've got the invasive cane toads. So in Florida, they would cheer for killing the frogs.
Okay.
If we're turning this into... So in that case, maybe Frogger is a horror movie about invasive species.
Yeah, there you go. Now you're thinking.
Oh, they're all horror movies, Phil.
And I would make a Dig Dug movie. That was... It's a little guy, and he digs. And
so
he dugs.
Does he unionize?
No.
It could be like a gritty union thing.
It could be, yes.
It could be Norm Around the Ground.
It's a regular Harlan County, USA, only with video game characters.
Yes.
And dragons, because there are little dragons who live underground that he has to blow up with his pump.
So do you suppose the enemy in this movie is the environmentalist, because the environmentalist wants to save the dragons?
Exactly.
So see, we have a complex of we have a number of viewpoints that can be presented in Phil and Lisa present video game movies.
And Hollywood, all of these movie ideas can be yours.
For a small fee.
For a mid-sized fee.
Well, let's just say small. We can negotiate. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Video game movies. Don't stop making them. Or make them better.
Yeah. Understand the medium. Don't transpose one medium to the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my complaint. Anyway, the point is we saw two movies in the theater in the span of a month, which was insane.
You mentioned the other movie.
Death of Stalin.
Want to give that want to review that for us?
Briefly or...
Yeah, well, go follow your heart.
Deeply funny. Dark, mm-hmm. depressing. You will fall into a Wikipedia wormhole.
Yeah, not a movie for everyone. Not a movie that if you see the trailer, you'll think this is going to be
not madcap.
This is going to be a laugh a minute, and it is funny. And there are many.
If you are the type of person who has ever burst into uncontrollable laughter at a funeral because displays of naked emotion and sincerity make you really uncomfortable,
this is your movie.
Yeah, this is your movie. The performances are good to great.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Buscemi is
terrific.
As Khrushchev. He's fantastic as Khrushchev. I thought that Simon Beale was... is that his name? Simon Beale?
No.
It's Simon something.
Yes.
He's British, so chances are one in four his name is Simon. Ian or Nigel.
Huh?
God, this is where like...
Bigoted.
No, angry British people like write, and I'm pulling from the incomparable because of this.
Mm-hmm. I'm canceling my pounds sterling that I was going to send.
Oh, now I'm the problem, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Jeffrey, see, this the other thing is Jeffrey Tambor is very funny in the movie. Simon Russell Beale. I was right.
Okay.
I forgot the name Russell.
Yeah, that was that you didn't mention his middle name was throwing me.
Yeah, Russell.
Mm-hmm.
But, see, Jeffrey Tambor puts in a good performance, but you watch him now, and I feel kind of queasy and complicit, given the...
given that he is a very unpleasant person.
The topic of investigation, so on and so forth. Other standouts besides Steve Buscemi and Simon Russell Beale, who is phenomenal and chilling as Leventry Beria. I feel like Michael Palin's kind of a non-presence, to be honest.
No, I disagree. Michael Palin's fine. He's fine.
He's also old.
He's also very old and used to doing travel logs. So
yeah.
I was just happy to see him in a movie again being funny.
Yeah. And the moment where Jason Isaacs
swoops
into the film and shrugs off his cape, it's a jolt of adrenaline that the movie needs. Oh, you know who else is great in that movie? Rupert Friend.
Yes, who plays Stalin's
Stalin Jr. Yes,
Stalin Jr. There's the sequel. There's the Saturday morning cartoon, Jim Henson's Stalin Babies.
No, Phil. That's even darker than what we just saw. Anyway, Death of Stalin, we really enjoyed that we took the time to go see it. It's not a movie you necessarily have to see on the big screen.
No, you could watch that very easily.
It's a King's Speech type of movie where you can watch it easily. Don't watch it in the back of an airplane seat, but you can easily watch it on your TV or on your iPad.
Mm-hmm.
So it's whereas Black Panther was a cinematic spectacle, and you really need to see that one in a theater.
Exactly.
Or be resentful that your friends didn't go see it with you.
Mm-hmm.
So that was it. But what's interesting is you go to see a movie like Death of Stalin, and oddly enough, they don't play Marvel movie previews.
No, they play a bunch
of... I have never felt so uncultured as I did sitting there watching those previews and just recoiling one after the other.
I mean,
I watch documentaries.
Well, typically we're used to seeing indie cinema at home where you can pick and choose what you want to see. It was very reminiscent to me of when I went to... in the 90s, when I was a young, pretentious college student, going to indie movies, and very much you're sitting there to see the movie you want to see, and it's trailers of a woman playing a violin while a bear weeps in the corner, and three people are doing it.
Although my favorite 90s movies trailer experience is I went to see Velvet Goldmine in downtown San Francisco. And the trailers they had before Velvet Goldmine were for gay porn.
Mm. Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah, I learned a lot in those trailers.
My strangest trailer experience, I went to see... Oh, gosh, what... Perrier's Debt, which is Cillian Murphy and Brendan Gleeson. It's basically an Irish.
Apparently, Cillian Murphy is just the avatar of strange trailers.
Yeah. It's a good movie.
Oh wait, no, I'm confusing him with I'm confusing Breakfast with Pluto with Velvet Goldmark. I'm so sorry, who's a fan of Irish men who dress in drag.
Anyhow, the movie itself is fine. It's a straight up Irish crime comedy.
Oh yeah, I actually really like those.
The previews that they showed were for The Killer Inside Me, which is not a pleasant trailer or a pleasant film.
Yeah.
And The Cremaster Cycle.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're sitting there watching these trailers and you're going, what the hell have I gotten myself into? Because generally trailers are, well, if you like this.
You'll like that.
If you've come for this movie, obviously you want to see this crap. And
it was not like that at all.
No, not like that at all. And I have to tell you, I was momentarily fearful waiting for Death of Stalin.
Because the trailers we saw, there was Unsane.
Right.
Which was just, It's
shot on an iPhone.
Well, it's just such a creepy, and I get that. Look, it's creepy subject matter because it's woman thrown into mental hospital because her evil ex stalker has engineered this. So, but to be in America in 2018, or more specifically, to be a woman in America in 2018, and then be like, here's a movie detailing how all of your legal rights are going to be taken away, and you're at the mercy of an institution that's dehumanized you. Like, that hits uncomfortably close to home.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're like, oh, good, I don't go to the movies for escapism. Not at all.
The true horror is the end of our democratic norms. Am I right, Lisa?
You are.
Yes. I mean, I'm into that again. That's kind of my thing, but that's not why we go to the picture show.
I'm into that. It's kind of my thing.
I don't understand why you go to the movies to be horrified and scared. Life is scary enough, especially with my death ray.
So there was Unsane.
Yeah.
There was one called Ghost Story?
Ghost Stories.
Yeah, because it's got
plural, because there are multiple stories.
So here's the thing, is it's got Martin Freeman in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Martin Freeman, what I kind of enjoy about him is as he gets deeper into middle age, he looks like he just hates everything.
Yeah, he really...
Like, he just looks like a mean, angry, bitter, cynical person.
Again, and he is making a horror movie, so I guess this is part of his brief.
Yeah, but, I mean, you don't go skipping through like Maria and Sound
of
Music.
But boy, does he look like he is just irritated that he booked this gig.
Yeah, no. So it's Martin Freeman looking magnificently irritated and or haunted. And you hate horror movies.
I really do hate horror movies. It is probably my least favorite genre of film, just because as Progressive Red Skull said so eloquently, I don't understand why you would voluntarily witness horror when life itself can be so horrible.
Many of the people I know who are big horror junkies, interestingly enough, they are people who struggle with anxiety or depression.
Mm-hmm.
And what I am wondering is if horror movies provide a sort of emotional catharsis without having to affect your real life.
That is, it is the thing that I hear, that the big appeal of the horror genre is catharsis. And I don't get that. I don't have that.
I don't like having feelings, so
no.
I don't see why I need to have any while watching a movie.
No.
I don't go to the movies to feel things.
Well, I'm not a delicate flower. You see the movies that I see. They're depressing.
They're bleak. Well, because you really... Phil likes the Westerns where, by the end of it, an Indian village has been massacred. A widow woman has probably been raped while her kids were thrown in a well. And there's one anti-hero who has managed to, like, scrape up a mule and half a sack of corn for her before he rides off into the distance. And that counts as, like, moral clarity.
I think you're overstating exactly what I enjoy. I don't think I've ever expressed a preference for... I hope this Western has rape.
No, but my point is that you're like, ooh, it's a Western. Ooh, brutality of man versus man in a lawless environment because they're arguing over what constitutes the nature of humanity. Ooh, here I go.
My favorite Westerns are about the closing of the borders and men out of time and men who realize that their place in the world is rapidly shrinking. That movie appeals to me.
So you must really love America 2018.
Yep. Big fan. Cosign. Keep it up. Looking forward to next year.
Men out of time. Yep. Anyway, mm-hmm. And once again, people are like ready and going, I am actively pulling my pledge from these people.
Yes.
I don't listen to this podcast for the political manifestos.
Didn't come here for the lecture on communism, as
well,
it were.
Actually, that raises a really interesting point, mm-hmm. though, which is, I think one of the reasons we had kind of the shock of seeing those trailers in the movie theater, mm-hmm. was, one, we had come to be entertained. We both like Armando Iannucci. We both love Veep.
Yeah.
So we had come to be entertained, and then to see these two trailers where it's like, everything is terrible and frightening. You're like, wow, this is setting a tone. The other thing that I realized, Phil, is that most of the time we watch trailers, it's because you and I are like, let's do a podcast. And
yes.
we go and we find trailers.
And we find generally lighthearted things to make fun of.
Or interesting things.
Yeah.
Or dumb things.
Yeah.
And here we were like, oh, look, it's a documentary called Ramen Heads about men who love to talk about ramen is art. And
yeah.
like, no, it was like when the dude, so in the trailer, there's a dude who's like, well, you have to eat ramen in silence because how else can you appreciate it? And I was like, really? Really? You know what ramen is, right? Ramen used to be, I suppose me being incredulous over people valorizing, you know, Jiro Dreams of Ramen or whatever the hell this is. And I say this as someone who's seen Jiro Dreams of Sushi.
What did you think?
I always think it's interesting when people focus on something with such fanatical exclusion,
mm-hmm.
and that's kind of one of my favorite genres of documentary because it gives rise to one of my favorite phenomena within the documentary, which is all of the befuddled, angry, irritated, confused people who are around the single-minded determination.
Right.
Because watching other people be like, okay, I'm on camera, I can't completely lose my shit, but I'm living in a really surrealistic environment. Like, I really enjoy that. But anyway, the thing about Ramen Heads that's driving me bananas, it would be like making a documentary about coffee.
Yeah.
And I have no doubt there's probably one out there. Please, if you know, if someone has made the documentary about Blue Bottle Coffee and wants to point me to somebody talking about how the shape of the bubbles on the top of your cup of cappuccino is not only an indication of whipping, it can also be used to tell the future. Like, I'm into it. Like,
Major Dickinson's Blend.
Oh, that's Pete's. You're messing up
yeah,
here.
Yeah, I know.
And Pete's is mid-market. Blue Bottle is small batch.
Well, so. What better documentary to make than about mm-hmm. a mid-market coffee blend.
I would like to see one about Chock Full of Nuts.
Ah, yeah, there you go. No,
taking it all back to Velvet Goldmine.
So I was sitting there in the theater, and frankly, kind of relieved when Ramen Heads came on because
it's not another horror movie.
At least
we had had two horror movies in a row,
at least
and then
Ramen terrifying
Heads.
Is happening.
It's just
some weirdos talking about soup that they like,
dude. Weirdos talking about soup.
And then I look over at you, and you were white knuckling the chair in the theater. You were ready to charge the screen and see if you could leap through Purple Rose of Cairo style. I will fight you, Ramen people.
It was off-putting.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons it was off-putting is
it also made me think of that Fred Armisen, Bill Hader documentary. Now
the takeoff on
sketch of the takeoff of
on Jiro's Trip to Truth.
Yeah,
where it's a documentary now.
Right, chicken rice.
Chicken, yeah. No, it made me think of that. So Bill Hader and Fred Armisen already made that movie, Ramen Heads. You can stop. I think the reason I'm so irritated by it mm-hmm. is some of my favorite movies about food have been about the power of food as a communal experience, or they've been about the power of food as an example of quiet competence or quiet genius. And they've been about food as a way to bridge the unbridgeable gulf between people. And then you see something like Ramen Heads, where it's basically posturing over who's going to be Alpha Noodle.
Yeah.
And
that would be a good video game, too. Alpha Noodle.
And it's unnecessarily precious, and it seeks to imbue a level of status and snobbery
mm-hmm.
at a time and at a moment in food culture where I don't think you need that. And I understand that part of the point to culture is to always invent new levels of exclusivity for people to aspire to and to define who's in and who's out, and so that the language is always changing. But in this case, it just seems so odious and so over the top.
Mm-hmm.
It's street food. It would be like doing a documentary called Sausage Wrists, where it's all about hot dog vendors in New York City.
Speaking of movies about food that bridging the gap and all that, and again tying it to Phil, watched a lot of pretentious movies in the 90s. Babette's Feast, I would recommend.
Yes.
Go see Babette's Feast. Mm-hmm. That is exactly along the lines of what you were talking about.
Yeah, exactly.
So
one of the first movies you and I watched too was Big Night.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
And that's another one, especially the end when they start when he starts making
when
the
makes
eggs.
The omelet.
At the very end. Yeah, that's a beautiful moment. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we saw those, and then we saw a trailer for a documentary on Yitzhak Perlman.
Well, yeah, that was the.
I was like, oh my god, this is finally a movie I'm interested in.
Thank
seeing.
Heavens! Yeah. It's Yitzhak Perlman. He's not going to murder anyone, is he?
No. So
Yitzhak Perlman is haunted.
Yeah.
By the violin.
Yeah. And then there was a trailer for a comedy called Flowers, which is about a bunch of disaffected teenagers who try to set up Ben from the Office as a pedophile.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's presented as a sexual coming-of-age comedy. So...
not interested at all.
I will watch it probably when it's on either Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
Mostly because it'll be the kind of thing where it plays in the background. I'm also interested in seeing what the vocabulary of movies that are aimed at people 20 years younger for me is going to be. I want to see what the visual vocabulary is these days.
I have such a negative reaction to Adam Scott, and for reasons I don't understand. Mm. Maybe it's because I think that he's of that class of comedian who has contempt for his audience, and that sort of comes through.
There's a really fine line between ironic detachment and open contempt, isn't there?
Yeah. And anyhow, he's just one of those people where if he's in a project, I have to either white knuckle my way through it or not watch it at all.
Well, my hope, again, to get back to the generational thing, Adam Scott's a Gen Xer like you and I.
Yep.
And you have to remember that the one thing that people strove to bring to the screen in our cohort, there was a lot of ironic detachment.
Mm-hmm.
And you were allowed to be enthusiastic about pop culture. You were allowed to be enthusiastic about your coffee and your cigarettes. You were not allowed to be enthusiastic about ideals,
mm-hmm.
other than the, I don't want to sell out.
Yeah.
And the ironic detachment was both a protective mechanism and a way of establishing pecking order. And so my hope is that with this movie, Adam Scott does his Gen X dude thing,
mm-hmm.
and it's subverted and routed by people who are dealing with a much different generational metaphor, because people in their 20s now are like totally into being sincere and unabashed fans,
right.
and you know, irony is something that that doesn't land with them.
Yeah.
And so, you know, when you've got an ironic, I'm detached and too good for this type of thing, that's something to be sent up.
Okay.
So who knows? I feel not great about the movie, but I'm willing to watch it, whereas it will have to, I don't know, I'm trying to figure out, I'm sure there's a circumstance under which ramen heads will come to cross my eyeballs, but I'm not willing to define what that circumstance is yet.
Is there an actor or actress who is your kryptonite, who if they are in a project, you go,
oh
I'm not going to go see that.
Oh, that's a great question.
Yeah.
I've never thought about that.
I know of one, but he's dead now and won't be making any more movies, so you're free.
I'll watch him. I just won't be quiet about it.
Sam Shepard, listeners, is who we're talking about.
He left his wife with a newborn while I went and wrote poetry with Patti Smith.
Yes, and the reason I know
that's
this...
a monstrous thing to do.
The reason I know every detail of this is because I'll be watching the right stuff. And every scene that will be recounted for my benefit.
Yep. Olan Jones was left alone with a baby while he went anyway.
Yes, that's very good. He's breaking the sound barrier now, Lisa.
Chuck Yeager can tweet about it.
Yes.
Anyway. So, I saw a movie recently which was an Irish crime comedy, except you can never watch it because it has David Thewlis in it.
Yes, he's another one.
Who you love.
I really dislike him.
Yes, yes.
So what we're saying here is if David Thewlis and Adam Scott made a picture together, that would just be like, they might as well call that, like, don't watch this, Phil.
Yeah.
Not for you.
Yeah.
No. Yeah.
You were, it's kind of a good thing our kid peaced out in the middle of the third Harry Potter book, because audience, we have a deal where we finish the Harry Potter book and then she gets to watch the movie. And mm-hmm. this way we make sure that her 7-year-old mind isn't blown. She knows what's coming. And for somebody who's that young and gets and the movie's intense at that age, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So if she knows the general storytelling structure, it provides a level of reassurance for her, and she can watch through, we can pause it, she feels more in control of what's a very intense experience. So, worked out well with the first two Harry Potter movies. We kind of had to piece out in the middle of the third book,
mm-hmm.
and I'm kind of glad because that's the book where we meet Professor Remus J. Lupin, who is played by David Thewlis.
Yep.
And it was going to be bad enough when you got to Sirius Black and started with your "I don't want to dance with no little wizards" thing, but having David Thewlis in there too would have just
Requires an explanation.
Okay.
Gary Oldman plays that part.
Gary Oldman plays the
and
part
is
of Sirius
in a
Black.
Movie that you really
adore,
love.
Sid and Nancy.
Sid and Nancy. I like it. I don't like it as much as you because the ugliness ending, of the yeah. movie. But
the ending of the movie is one of the most perfect endings in cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And it is more importantly, I think it's actually one of the endings that's gotten better with time purely for circumstances outside its own control.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This is the story of Sid Vicious and Nancy Spungen. I'm not spoiling anything because the events.
It's well documented.
Yeah. And after Sid is released from jail,
mm-hmm.
because they can't hold him on, so they release him after. Oh, you might have, maybe you stabbed your girlfriend. They let him out, and he goes to get a pizza, and he basically gets a pizza at the end of the world, or rather, at a dump across the river from Manhattan, and there is a scene outside the pizzeria where a group of children are holding a boombox, and it's playing.
Disco.
Yeah, Casey and the Sunshine Band, I think.
Funky Town, or no, I can't.
Make a little love.
Oh,
get down tonight.
Yeah.
Get down.
Yeah.
And they're like,
average white band.
Okay. Yeah. And they're like, come on, Sid, dance with us. And Sid's like, I'm not dancing with no little kids.
Yeah.
And like the whole point of that scene is, oh look, it's the death of punk. Is disco is ascendant, and it's supposed to show you the generational passing of the torch. And eventually, Sid does dance with them,
mm-hmm.
and it's, you know, he does this punk rock thing. But it's the I'm not dancing with no little kids.
Yeah.
And so like the
so naturally we seized on that when he was cast in the
Harry
Potter
movies.
When
Gary Oldman was cast in the Harry Potter movies, and every time he was on screen with children, Phil would be like, I'm not dancing
with no little wizards.
Yeah.
So that's that.
So I think the lesson here is that when we finally get around to movie number three with the kiddo, mm-hmm. you will have to leave the house.
Yes.
Because between David Thewlis and...
David Thewlis, the man who ruined Wonder Woman for me.
Mm, this is true.
Wonder Woman's okay. It's okay. But then David Thewlis is on the screen an awful lot.
Yeah.
Perhaps more than really he should be.
Well, if it were up to you, he'd be on the screen not at all.
If it were up to me, they would say, oh, look, there's David Thewlis. And then Wonder Woman would reach into his chest and pull out his heart and go, problem averted. Now, where is Adam Scott?
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, you will never watch this movie, but folks at home, if you have Amazon Prime streaming, there's a movie called Divorce Jack. It's an Irish crime comedy. It's got Rachel Griffiths in it as well, who is a huge draw in the movie, and I enjoyed it. It's mm-hmm. a pleasant little diversion. So, what are the other previews that we wanted to talk about tonight? We talked about three so far,
yeah.
Three of which we hated. There was one, though, that you and I really did not hate.
Oh, yes.
Tag.
This is Tag, yeah.
Yeah, surprisingly not hating it, because also in continuing along the vein of actors Phil doesn't care for that much,
mm-hmm.
it's got Jeremy Renner in it.
You know, I'm going to amend that. I'm going to challenge your assessment there. I think he's a fine actor.
He is a fine
actor. Yeah. I enjoy him in a lot of things, not as Hawkeye, but who does?
Well, nobody. He's not
no
a favorite of the Avengers Infinity War.
What I don't like about Jeremy Renner is Jeremy Renner, because he made that commercial.
Oh,
where
God. You got some. You actually pitched and got a freelance assignment on how much
I wrote a freelance article about that stupid commercial.
And how much you loathe it, yeah.
I can't even remember what it was for. Some form of alcohol.
Yeah.
That
seems on brand.
And you really have to be a terrible actor and a terrible person to make me not want to drink.
Yeah.
And so basically, he's wearing this mustard-colored turtleneck. And
that's an unfortunate choice for him.
Yeah, and it's all Jeremy Renner, Renaissance man. And you're just, he's hanging out with his jazz band.
Well, honey, during the Renaissance, many people had venereal diseases and died insane.
Exactly.
Maybe that's what they meant.
Maybe that's what they meant. Yeah. Well, that would be on brand, too.
Yeah.
So there
were a few times when you were just like, him, and so I honestly thought that he was one of those actors.
No, he has not reached David Thewlis status yet. where he shows up on screen. I enjoyed him in Hurt Locker. Yeah. I have my problems with Hurt Locker. I enjoyed him in The Town. He's really good in The Town. He's really great in
Ben
The Town.
Ben Affleck is the worst part of The Town.
Well, Ben Affleck is the worst part of every movie he directs, ironically.
Yeah. No, so we're going to circle back to things with Jeremy Renner that you might like, because there's a movie I watched recently that I want to recommend to you.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, we're talking about the preview for this movie, since we ruined them. It's a movie called Tag. Ed Helms is in it as well. John Hamm. So, hey, it's like the comedic follow-up to The Town.
Yeah. Yeah. What if we did The Town, but it's a comedy? And there's no Ben Affleck. I like it. I already. It's great.
Isla Fisher's in it. Yeah. Clearly is the cool wife, the fun wife.
You're forgetting the best part of the trailer.
Hannibal
Buress.
Oh, God. Yes. Every time he opens his mouth. Anyway, the premise is that all these dudes play game of tag every May.
For
the past 30 years. And Jeremy Renner plays the one dude who has never been tagged. And so before they retire the game of tag, they're determined to make him it. That's your movie. That's it. They lay it out in the trailer. Nice, simple premise. There's a lot. And the thing is it does showcase what Renner's good at, which is he's an excellent physical actor. Mm-hmm. So he gets to do a lot of stunt work here. Hannibal Buress walks with every scene he's in, mm-hmm. With his delivery. So that's just a joy to watch.
And this could be one of those situations where the trailer has all the best jokes and the movie itself is a painful slog.
Yeah, between these pieces. But
it's very reminiscent of Date Night,
which
has proven to be a divisive movie. I know people who really like it, and I know people who really hate it.
Although when you and I saw the trailer for it, there mm-hmm. is the scene where Jason Bateman gets the gunshot, and then when his wife is pulling out supplies, she pulls out a magazine,
mm-hmm.
and you and I turned and looked at each other. We're like, "Yeah, that's us."
That would be it.
It was like that moment of recognition. Where we're like, "Okay, whoever wrote this movie knows people like us," which is unnerving.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tag looks hilarious. Hannibal Buress is a super, super funny dude, mm-hmm. and I'm glad to see him getting in this ensemble in some way, shape, or form. And again, it's a dude movie. It looks like it's The Hangover mixed with Old School,
mm-hmm.
a little bit.
Yeah. It has that, early 21st century bro-ish comedy, but without the bro-ish elements.
Yeah,
or where the bro-ish elements, it's more obvious that if you're sitting there going, "Oh yeah, bros," you're
missing the point. Because I think the point of this is that these dudes have all mellowed into middle-aged daddom. I mean, it's made clear in the trailer at least one of them is a father. I presume John Hamm just spends his time being handsome.
Arrested emotional development is not celebrated in this movie.
No,
I would wager to say
exactly. So
unless the trailer is going to pull a 180 from the movie,
which is entirely possible,
which could happen.
But we feel good about Tag.
Yeah,
you know,
looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. So anyway, I wanted to talk to you about movies we've seen lately too.
Yes,
I wanted to recommend Wind River.
Okay.
Which was written and directed by Taylor Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
And you heard me rant recently about how much I loved Hell or High Water.
Yes.
And how much you need to see that movie with me,
mm-hmm.
even though there's a little painful moment of director self-insert. But Wind River, Hell or High Water is the Sicario is the first part of his American Frontier trilogy. Hell or High Water is part two. And then Wind River is a follow-up. And long story short, Renner plays...
Jeremy Renner, I hate that guy.
I know, right? he plays a hunter with the Bureau of Land Management, I think, who helps keep the wolves and other predator populations in check on the Wind River Indian Reservation. A young woman is found dead in the snow, and what happens is him teaming up with the one FBI agent who's sent to investigate. And the reason she's sent to investigate it is, fun fact, U.S. Indian reservations are legal morasses because there's federal jurisdiction, there's tribal jurisdiction, there's state jurisdiction.
Sovereign lands.
Yeah.
In this.
So if something happens, trying to figure out who's responsible for investigating it can take a lot of time too.
Right.
And this movie goes into that, and it goes into the circumstances of the area and what it takes to live there and why people would leave or why people would choose to stay. And it's beautiful and it's heartbreaking and it's brutal in parts.
Mm-hmm.
but necessarily so. And what I have to say is Hackford has a real gift for the spaces in a story. He's got a real gift for making you understand how wide open landscapes can become part of a person's character. And he has a real gift for letting landscapes and silences stretch out long enough for you to sink into a story and surrender to the pace and go along with what he's doing. I really love the movie. I'd love to see it again with you.
Okay. Well, we will watch that. That is Wind River.
Mm-hmm. It's on Netflix.
Wider than a mile.
Yes.
Crossing you in style someday.
Someday.
Yeah.
I still want you to see Hell or High Water, too, because yes. That was fantastic. And this is where I was like, holy crap, Chris Pine can act.
Hell or High Watermelon, yes.
Yes, Hell or High Watermelon.
Yes, which is a beer.
Well, no.
From 21st Amendment.
I thought it was when you hollowed out the watermelon and used it as a bong.
It could be either.
Did you ever do that thing in college where you, like, cut a plug in the watermelon and then pour in a bottle of Everclear and then eat the watermelon and get drunk?
No, Lisa, because I take my drinking very seriously. And I don't want fruity flavors getting in the way of my alcohol.
Okay, there we go.
So, two movies that I recently saw on a plane.
Uh-huh.
One was Darkest Hour,
uh-huh.
Which is the perfect plane movie in that you can watch it on the little screen, and you're not losing very much. This again is Gary Oldman's Oscar-winning turn. In fact, I watched it the night he won his Oscar.
Does he say, "I'm not dance with"?
I ain't gonna dance with now little Nazis.
Yeah, there you go.
Very emotional moment.
Yes.
In the movie. No, it's him doing his Winston Churchill imitation, and he's good in it. The movie is no better or worse than the half a dozen other Winston Churchill movies that you could pull from anywhere. I would recommend the one with Albert Finney, which you and I saw.
I love Albert Finney. Such a great movie.
It was on HBO and BBC.
It was on HBO.
Gosh, nearly a decade ago, because the sequel was Brendan Gleeson.
Mm.
The Albert Finney one is the pre-war years. The Brendan Gleeson one is the war years. Either of those are just as good as Darkest Hour, and both of those guys are just as good as Gary Oldman was in the role. And indeed, apparently Brian Cox is quite good in his Churchill movie that he made the same year. And
do you suppose that when British actors hit like a certain age milestone, in order to stay in whatever the British equivalent of equity is, they're required to make a Churchill movie?
Probably.
Yeah.
And I feel that the Academy Award was probably people going, "We should have given you the Oscar for Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy."
Oh, I love that movie.
So, here's your Oscar now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, the guy from Get Out who probably should have won it instead.
Yeah.
In 30 years, we can give you an award
for
a movie that you don't deserve it for.
When he's playing Distinguished Elder Statesman.
Yes, when he's playing Mandela or something. Such role. So there's that. And on that same flight, I watched Battle of the Sexes, which I enjoyed more than Darkest Hour. It's
Billie Jean King's post-war policies were much more palatable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The scene where Billie Jean King says, "I ain't gonna dance with no little sexist," is outstanding.
We've crossed all the jokes.
Yes, all the jokes are crossing. Emma Stone is not my favorite actress. She is the Adam Scott of cherubic lady actresses.
She's not cherubic anymore. She's lost all the adolescent softness to her.
Well,
she's an interesting face. I enjoy watching her face, but
that's one of us.
Well, I liked her a whole lot in Crazy Stupid Love, which she also made with Steve Carell,
who is great in this movie.
Yeah,
he is a great actor.
He is
Steve Carell.
Yeah.
Not at all. If you've seen that sitcom with Tim Curry, what you would expect.
I think that sitcom with Tim Curry illustrates that a lot of actors have to do a lot of scut work to keep the health insurance and get known by casting directors.
Yeah,
and so on and so forth.
Is outstanding in this. We landed before I could see the last 20 minutes of the movie, so I don't know how it ended.
How does it end, Phil?
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Although, having read and heard reviews of it, I fear that the ending of the movie is a little bit too much. Well, that's gender equality.
And then sexism in sports was forever banished.
Sexism was forever solved. Yeah. Okay, we have gender equity, tick.
Yes.
We have equal pay for equal work, box
ticked.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, a little bit too much of that, I understand.
Yeah.
But I look forward to...
I also think that sometimes these movies are almost a victim of timing, because remember that movie landed about the same time that USA Gymnastics blew wide open?
Yeah.
So it's really tough to swallow that narrative when real life is showing you that, mm-hmm. no! Wow, 2018 has
Sarah
been...
Silverman is also quite good in that movie.
You wouldn't know it.
You wouldn't imagine that, but she's very, very good.
Mm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
So those are mine too.
Yeah, and we watched The Godfather together.
Yes.
Because we
a little known independent movie from 1972.
But no, it was fun to watch it. And it was interesting because we were busy talking about the casting in that movie.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, James Caan as Sonny Corleone.
Mm-hmm.
That casting has always bothered me. It still continues to.
Care to share why for those of us that weren't present at that conversation?
I read the book. Mm-hmm. So I think.
Did you now?
Oh, God. It was like a childhood scarring incident because I got my hands on it in third grade.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, no.
That is not appropriate for third graders.
No, because you want to know what happens in the first 16 pages of the book.
I am aware of what happens in the first 16 pages.
The prodigiously endowed Sonny Corleone has relations with a woman who is not his wife. Anyway, there's a lot about that I didn't understand. And of course, I asked the nuns at church.
Yeah.
And they were like, this is above our pay grade.
Yeah.
There is a reason we're the brides. Christ.
See, I thought they were going to go, James Caan is a great actor!
They're Irish, the nuns.
James Caan is a great actor!
There we go.
Yeah.
And
more like that.
No, but the thing is the whole point of Sonny is he's big and brutish and he's big and brutish and not bright and possessed of a volcanic temper. And while James Caan does anger very, very well.
Very well.
And he does like barely leashed anger very, very well. He's too wiry and balletic and graceful to be Sonny.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't have the... Sonny is a volcano. Sonny is an incipient, simmering threat. And Robert Duvall plays that. That is Robert Duvall in a nutshell. Although, you know, like, I'm ride or die for Tom Hagen, but...
Robert Duvall is quite good as Tom Hagen.
And, but, you know, you wanted an actor who had more banked menace, and I don't feel like James Caan sells it for me personally.
The genetic tumbler where Al Pacino, James Caan, and John Cazale all came out of the same pool is a little bit...
We're back to, like, my number one complaint about The Town, actually.
Yeah?
Is because literally every time Blake Lively and Jeremy Renner were on screen together, like, I was there, how are they related? Like, that's not even a Punnett square with the genes. That's like a Punnett tesseract, how they made that work. It was just bananas. So, it's improbable movie siblings are, like, one of my favorite sidelines, too. Like, when they cast two people and you're expected to believe that they're related to each other, you're like, no, this isn't going to work.
So, The Godfather, check it out.
Yeah.
You probably haven't.
Yeah, and what else have I watched lately? I've been watching a lot of miniseries.
Yes, you have.
So there's that. And for a TV show, if you haven't checked out Toast of London on Netflix yet, please do. We enjoyed it greatly.
Yes, we watched
it. And the episodes are like 24 minutes long, so you can like watch that and then fall asleep on the couch.
And because it's a British series, they're about six like, episodes per season.
Yes, and also John Hamm is in.
Yes.
So there you go. Hamm!
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and Clem Fandango.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I can hear you, Clem Fandango.
So, Philip, I feel like we have given the people...
I think that we've let them know that we're still alive.
And that we've ruined several movies for them.
That we're being well-fed and cared for. And
are there any movies you're looking forward to?
Gosh, you're putting me on the spot.
Well, you've got a backlog on the DVR. You can just say that.
I have a backlog on the DVR, Lisa. And, I am looking forward, now that I've actually... seen some of the Oscar-nominated movies from the Oscars that have just... My way of doing things is basically to watch the Oscars for the next year to 2 years after they've been nominated, so I'll be working my way through that pile.
Yeah, and then deciding which awards were wrong.
Yes.
That's my favorite part.
Yes. There's a certain value to...
Did we talk about how much you disliked La La Land last time?
I'm not sure that we did, but I really dislike that movie.
Yeah, anyway.
Anyhow, write us if we didn't.
Yes.
Because I'll be happy to go into why that is not a good movie.
He's already done this at least two different social gatherings we've had.
With people who did like the movie.
It was indelible.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you haven't heard why Phil doesn't like La La Land yet, let us know, and we will record another episode.
Drop that line.
Anyway, dear
Mash
listeners.
Mash that like button.
Yeah. Anyway, dear listeners, thank you so much for sticking with us. We really appreciate it. And thank you for listening to The Incomparable.
Yes.
All right, Red Skull, would you like to play us out?
I'm not a performing monkey, Lisa! Goodbye.